afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Monday, December 4th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, you think it was spring here. Allergy season in the middle of December is crazy.
You know, it's warm down here,
oh,
too.
Oh, good grief. It's just had a little bit of frost, but, you know, no frost on the windows yet, just a little on the grass.
And no, we haven't had any frost. I mean, I'm sitting around in my shorts. You know, I'm sure, not my underwear, of course, but it's warm out.
Yes, and we've had some beautiful temperatures, just lovely, although that's supposed to change this coming up this end of the week. Possible, you know, flurries or something, maybe just rain, but, you know, significantly colder than what it is today. I think it was in Minnesota. They had temperatures in the 70s for this time of the year. It's unheard of. You know, thank goodness they're having that climate change summit in Chicago today and tomorrow. And just, I talked about it earlier today. They're having a climate change summit in Chicago. They want to turn all these buildings into, you know, green energy, get them all off fossil fuels, and all by the year 20, you know, the early 2020s. And I'm thinking, how do they plan on paying for all that? They can't even pay their pension. How do they plan on turning 98% of their office buildings and commercial buildings into, you know, climate change friendly? You know, it's just absurd. But you know what? A lot of money. It'll be funneling into Chicago, you know, these people, the green people, the, you know, who think it's a great idea. They'll be funneling money in there, and it'll just go into people's pockets, and those poor old taxpayers out of Illinois will just keep paying and paying and paying, particularly the Chicago area. But hey, that's what they do here in America right now.
Well, that's what they talk about. I don't know who's going to pay all this stuff. I don't think it's going to be paid. I mean, the debt is too great to be paid. We keep going deeper into debt. Who's going to pay it? Talk to kids. Talk to your children and your grandchildren. Explain to them that in order to continue to live the style to which we've become accustomed, they need to live in debt for the rest of their lives. Sooner or later, this younger generation is just going to say, they're not going to pay the debt.
Well, as long as they...
And it won't even necessarily be a choice. It'll be a situation where they're going to say, look, we can't. Where are our jobs? You guys are so smart, you can run up the debt and ship jobs to foreign countries, industries to foreign countries. What are we going to do for work? How are we going to pay that debt? This is not going to be... I mean, you can see this is the train wreck coming. And people talk about the debt as if, well, we got to pay the debt. Really? How about leaving it all to me? Let me, how much do we owe? $20 trillion? I'll pay that, Melody.
Heck, people don't even talk about it out there. It's just, you know, it's just something that doesn't mean anything anymore. But one day it will. I saw a little video snippet of Orrin Hatch this morning. He was arguing with somebody, and there was some child care payment that they left expire. You know, some sort of, you know, program that Washington allowed to expire last month. And I guess this Democrat was, you know, confusing, you know, was yelling at Orrin Hatch about, you know, well, how can you let this child care program lapse and then you turn around and do a $1.5, you know, trillion that's going to, you know, add to the deficit. You know, and Orrin Hatch is up there saying, well, we don't have the money to pay that child care program. But you know what? We're going to do this $1.5 trillion. I mean, it's just like insanity. It's like, do these people know what they're even talking about? Do they even hear their arguments? And, they, you know, he got all defensive about, well, I was part of that program and there's no money to pay it. Oh, okay. But you can, you know, put us $1.5 trillion deeper in debt for the tax reform. And who knows what time. And I also explained earlier today, I saw that, I don't know which Democrat it was, but he was holding this book. It was about 4 inches, maybe 4 inches thick, and he's waving it and he says, this is the new tax reform. He says, we got it, I don't know, 25 minutes to an hour before they voted on it. Yeah. And you know, he was flipping the pages, and in the right margin of one of the pages. It was just a lot of handwritten notes.
Yep. And allegedly unintelligible.
You can't even read
it. You can't read them.
You couldn't even. He says,
they're
going to
vote for it anyway.
One word. He says, I could read one word.
So what does that mean exactly?
And it's like, so how
does anybody,
know what's in
and
there?
Can it mean anything anyone says? Now that we voted for it, it's like Pelosi with the Obamacare. You have to vote for it, then you can find out what's in it. This is the same thing.
It's the same thing.
They're
going
to vote for it that has handwritten notes that nobody can read. We'll have to get somebody to channel. You know, we'll have to bring a psychic in to figure out what the notes mean.
But I saw one person even discussing it. Yeah, you know, why aren't they in outrage? It's just, you know, it. But anyway, so that's what we're going to get with that tax reform. And so who knows who it benefits, and they're still going to have to make changes on it and so forth. So, you know.
You know what it comes down to? It's unfortunate and it's sad and it's not a good thing, but it really increasingly looks like it's going to be every man for himself. The whole system has become so crazy that if you want to escape the insanity, it's going to be up to you more than anything else. You're not going to be able to rely on the federal government or your state government or your local government. The whole thing is going nuts. You're going to have to take care of things as best you can for yourself because you're dealing with a bunch of crazy people, or at least people who are incredibly desperate, and they understand that they're coming to an end on this thing. It can't continue forever. And most of the people sitting there in Congress and certainly the Senate and the rest are probably figuring, this is going to blow up on my watch. And how are they going to explain that to the folks back home? Yeah.
So they're really hoping that there's a little trickle down from their $1.5 trillion dollar.
Yeah, they're hoping for that, and there may be.
They're hoping for something.
It's not all crazy. It's not entirely crazy, but it's a lot crazy, and nobody seems to mind. Oh, that's crazy. Let's vote for it. Not a big thing.
And truly, the big benefits go to the banks. All these big benefits go to the Wall Streeters. All these asset funds and so forth. Those who really are going to benefit from the tax reform. They're the ones that'll get the biggest bang for the $1.5 trillion. So.
Well, I don't know. Isn't Wall Street the single biggest lobbying entity for Washington, D.C.?
Well, lobbying, and they are Washington, D.C.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, it wouldn't be so. If there's no point
there's
to
no
have
lobbying about
you
it.
You can't get money for them. You know, it's like opening up a store at the North Pole. We're going to open up a new Walmart at the North Pole, and we're going to cater to Eskimos and walruses.
Wall Street,
there's not
big
enough
business.
People up there to support the new store. You know, we are doing things that are simply crazy. They don't make sense. And we just, let's do it faster. The solution from government seems to be, yeah, it's crazy, but if we do it fast enough, it might work.
But you know what? One day it will make sense when it all comes tumbling down. Then it'll say, well, gee, yeah, we shouldn't have done that. It kind of makes sense now.
No, they'll never say that. They will never say that they shouldn't
have done. Not government, but the people will have a better understanding.
No, the intriguing thing that remains to be discovered is who's going to be blamed when this thing blows up? Because it isn't going to be the government. They're not going to say, well, maybe that fiat monetary system was stupid. Maybe it was even treasonous. Okay? Nobody's going to talk about anything like that. They're going to say it was the Russians. Or maybe it was the liberals. Or maybe it was the conservatives. Or maybe it was Donald Trump. But it isn't government in general. It's not the system. There's nothing wrong. And even if there was, we're not going to take any blame for it. We're going to find somebody to blame. Who are we going to blame, Melody? China?
Actually,
North Korea?
Actually, no one ever gets blamed. No one. I mean, because in all the past recessions, whenever we had big drops and so forth, there isn't really anyone who gets blamed. You know, it's all, and usually it's always the bankers that are behind it. Bankers and, the Wall Streeters, the politicians and so forth, they're all behind it, but they never point a finger to anyone. You might find a little scapegoat or two that, you know, will get fined and so forth, but throughout the history of this country, whenever there was any type of a recession, or who gets blamed for it? No one.
It's always something of a mystery. All right, if a recession is a mystry and we don't know why it happened, then who is really in control of the economy? Anyone? I mean, is anyone really in control? Who's in control if we can't understand why we had a recession and who's responsible for the recession? If you can't pin the responsibility, then no one is really in control.
Well, you can't fix it either. If you don't really point to what is the problem and you know who started it, you can't fix any of it, and you're bound to repeat. And that's the whole point. And you know, of course, the last recession, everybody blames it on the consumer. You know, mainly the consumer gets it.
But good choice. Yeah. Because we can't jail them all. We can't slap all the wrists, whatever. We're just going to, you people out there.
You people, it's all your fault. You quit spending.
It's your fault, not our fault. We're just going
to go. Went into debt, you bought those McMansions, you couldn't afford them, so when the adjustable rates came along, it put you under, and you shouldn't have been buying those homes, and you shouldn't have been lying on those mortgages when you were applying for loans, and, you know, so it was all them. But let's go ahead and look at all them at the gold today. Actually, we had a somewhat of a little bit of a recovery here today, even though we're still down $440 on gold today at $1,276. Silver was down 11 cents today at $16.41, way off the low of $16.13. But the platinum and palladium are the ones that really got hit today hard. Platinum was down $12 today at $930. Palladium was down 29 bucks at 996. You have the USDX today is trading stronger by 0.32 at 93.21. Crude oil was down 92 cents today at 57.44. And all that early morning trade, you had the Dow, when I turned on the futures this morning, it was up 200 points strong. And it held on to 58 of those 200 points. The Dow was up 58 points today at 24,290. The NASDAQ was down 1% at 72 points at 6,775. And a little change in the S&P, 2639, down 2.78. 10-year yield, 2.38%, up 0.02. Euro broke down into the 118. Down 0.05, so at least it's the high 118s. And that's about it for the markets. Of course, there's just all the drama out of Washington with the what's going on with Trump and what's going on with Mueller and the Russians and the impeachment investigations and Flynn and Papadopoulos and you know, it's
a rich cast of characters, Melody.
And Mr. Trump's
make a great movie.
Mr. Trump's lawyer comes out and says, "President cannot obstruct justice." I don't know how that works, but so here's something I just see in a topic. This is a USA Today. Feds issue 4,000 orders to seize guns from people who failed background checks. I didn't have a chance to read this, but I just saw the headline and thought it was a little interesting.
It's real interesting. It implies that background checks, guns, that somehow they applied for background check. The background check was granted, apparently, or was ignored. I'm not sure what happened there, but they did get guns, and then somebody said, the background checks, you 4,000 people failed the background checks, and so we're going to have to take your gun away. I'll bet that works out real well.
Yeah, I wonder who gets to go collect them. But, yeah, just as it was a USA Today review, found that the FBI issued more than 4,000 requests last year for the agents from the BAT to retrieve guns from prohibited buyers. So BATF will be doing the picking up. I mean, how does that work?
Well, they're going to come knock on the door, and they're going to ask, "Do you have any guns?" People say, "No, we don't have any. I sold them to some young teenagers I don't know their names, but they made, you know, they made me a good, they mowed the lawn. I gave them a gun instead of cash.
And again, it's just something how poorly government does something. Because if,
does everything.
If the background check is not completed within the 72-hour time limit, 72 hours, you can't, yes, I get that there's thousands, but you can't handle that? And why can't you handle it? Why couldn't you handle these checks at a 72-hour
time? And why can you, why is it, why do you have time later? I mean, how much time? Okay, you didn't get it done in 72 hours, but you've got 4,000 that you did get done later on. I understand, all right. But did the number of background checks fall off then? We had a big surge at some point, and we had an extra 4,000 background checks. Couldn't get to them, got the gun anyway. Now, but we have time now to do this. We're going back when? I don't know. What this is evidence of what happens when you try to regulate everything on the face of the earth. There are things that you just have to leave to people to handle on their own. And the idea of these background checks for firearms, I doubt that you can find any significant evidence that it's helped save anyone's life. Mostly, if you want to save a life, you need a firearm to defend yourself, especially your own. You need your own firearm in order to do so. I know that there are abuses, and I know there's exceptions. There's people get a gun, go home, and shoot their wife or their husband. Or who knows? They're going to shoot somebody. All right? I get that. But this is life. This is not some sort of a movie. This is not something that can be regulated. There are people who are angry enough where if they can't get a gun, they'll get a screwdriver. And still inflict a mortal blow on people. And you can't regulate this out. It makes people feel good. We'll regulate, and then it'll solve the problem. No, it won't.
Well, it's just such incompetency coming from. I mean, they can't do anything right. I mean, you know, you think in the world of technology today. You know, sometimes that's why I question technology. You'd think you'd be able to put the information in. They have all these computer bases that connect all these criminal computer bases from state to state at the federal level and everything. You put the name and the info. If they didn't qualify, you'd spit it out. Computers don't run any faster that they can't handle these requests within 72 hours. You know,
yeah,
I mean, it's just like what you can't. And this wasn't the first year. I mean, last year there was 4,100 gun purchases the FBI referred for seizure last year, and the year before was only 2,892 requests. So, I mean, it jumped considerably for these past 2 years. So, and technology is better. Sure.
And so are commercials. Commercials have been improved. Go ahead and listen to the next couple of commercials, folks, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival.
The United States. Kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addisk, and I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I'm carrying through the special from last from Friday. It's a great little package with a Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold piece and $25 face value of the brilliant uncirculated Washington quarters, the 90%. It's a great, great buy. This also includes your shipping cost, $1,070. $1,070 for this gold coin, $10 Liberty gold piece, and $25 face value of the brilliant uncirculated 90%. $1,070. One or two or three packages are available. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. If you want 100 of these packages, they are available. 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you go to our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And this morning I wanted to find out what the U.S. Mint, what their bullion sales were for November. I don't get shocked very often, but these numbers shocked me. They really did. Silver Eagles, the month of November 2017, 385,000. Wasn't the low of the year. Yeah, September was actually the low for the number of ounces of coins that were the Silver Eagles. They were only 320,000 were sold that month for the month of September. November was 385. So far this year, there's been a total just a little over 17.3 million coins that were sold. They're 1 ounces, so 1 ounce American Silver Eagles. Last year, they were sold over 40,000 or 40 million. 40 million. And now we're at 17. So you want to know why we're having a little difficult time getting out of the, you know, $17 range for the silver. And yes, there's help. They manipulate the price down too. But it's easy for it when it's when there's lack of interest. Gold Eagles, you have 12,000. 12,000 in a country of, 300 plus million people, and they sell 12,000. And of course, there's older dates and things like that that are sold. This is not the only gold, you know, that is sold during the month. We sell a lot of pre-33 coins. We sell, some of the backdated silver or gold Eagles. And, you know, so those aren't accounted for, but for purchasing directly from the U.S. Mint, as wholesalers and brokerage companies and some of the participating banks, there was 12,000 of them purchased. So I found that quite interesting.
Well, you know what it is, if we keep talking about you buy low and you sell high. If you're going to buy low, you're necessarily going to buy when there is minimum interest and everybody says you're crazy to buy. If you're going to sell high, you got to sell it when everybody's screaming for it, much those people that are screaming for Bitcoin. It's a sell high moment for, it would appear to be sell high moment for Bitcoin. It appears to be a buy low moment for gold. And so, and if that's what the fundamentals tell you, you look at it and you say, what are the fundamentals of this? Is this a good investment? But it does seem like you're at that buy low moment. And it's evident from the fact that there isn't much interest in buying the silver and the gold from the U.S. Treasury. It's diminished compared to what it's been in the past.
And I mean, and you're going to begin to see inflation creeping into this economy more and more and more. Even if we see a little trickle down from these tax, from the tax reform, you're going to see inflation coming in. But inflation is a given. It's here every day. It steals your purchasing power every day. Not just when the collapse happens, not just when there's a reset, not just when, you know, this or that happens. It steals from you every single day through inflation, your purchasing power. And that's something people fail to realize. And you wonder why you don't have any disposable income anymore. You work and work and work. You don't get ahead. Well, why? Because everything is increasing. And your dollar buys you less. And
I had a dose of inflation last night, Melody.
What was that?
I ordered some food delivered from a Chinese restaurant nearby. And I've done business with them for years, and they have good food. It's not superb, but it's good. It's okay. And I ordered three, four dishes and brought them in. They got here. I thought something looks a little strange. The bag that it came in and whatever.
Smaller.
Yeah. What they've got is they have new styrofoam packages that they're sending the Chinese food in.
Mm-hmm.
And they are smaller than what they've had in the past. I'm going to guess, I don't know exactly how much smaller, but it looks to me like they're about 20% smaller than they were in the past. So what happened is I'm paying the same price I paid mm-hmm. the past, but I'm getting 20% less food.
Mm-hmm.
It looks to me. It's maybe 10%, 15%, looks to me to be 20%. Still, the food is still good, but you see, and it's not the sort of thing that makes me mad. It's not the sort of thing that says I'm not going to do business with these people anymore, but it's just a reality of life that you're going to get less. You're going to get less product for more dollars, right? And you can understand. I can understand the people at the Chinese restaurant. They're under pressure. Prices of food is going up. Number of people coming in may be going down. They're being squeezed. I don't know. It's one of those things. You look at this, and it's leaf in the breeze. You know, when Chinese restaurants start going out of business, that's a good sign that something really serious is going on, because they're usually staffed by family members and immigrants and whatever, who the labor is usually minimal cost there. And when they start going out of business, it's evident that there's a lot of stress, economic stress in the community.
I was going to make a cat joke, but I won't.
You're going to make a cat joke?
A cat joke. Chinese food. Anyway, I won't.
Do you want me to make one?
No.
Okay.
No. But we have lots of listeners who have pets as cats, and I like cats, but, you know, there was always that little joke that,
you know, maybe Chinese have some food. Asian ancestry. Do you have any Asian ancestors?
Excuse me?
Do you have any Asian ancestors?
Not that I know of.
Well, then it's hard to understand. Then you don't like cats the way the Asians like cats.
Not in the same
manner.
They like
cats the way I like chicken.
Right. Exactly. I remember I heard a story one time. I don't know if it's true or not. They were visiting China, and they took their dog with them.
Oh!
And they went into a restaurant. And the you know, not understanding the language, and, you know, the people came over from the restaurant, and you know, they wanted the dog, and, you know, the lady thought that they were taking the dog to take care of it while she was eating.
Well, guess what?
I don't need to finish the
dinner.
Story. I don't need to finish the story.
They thought they brought the dog in to be prepared for dinner. Is that what they figured?
Pretty close. Yes, absolutely.
Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And
whoa.
What?
Well, I just said, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, look, isn't this good? Isn't it? This is the tastiest main dish I've ever had. What is this? That's your dog, lady.
Well, you know, they don't, the stories from people who visit, you know, they don't have, well, I don't know if they do now, but, you know, when you're talking 25, 30 years ago and longer, they don't have animals. They don't have pets. They don't, you know, because it was a food source. So, but,
well, it's not only it's a food source, but, you know, pets are a kind of luxury. By the time you get down, the cost of keeping an animal around the house, or more than one animal, is significant. By the time you get done with the food, and if you have cats, you got cat litter, And then you need veterinarians to do whatever needs to be done periodically. It's a luxury that poor people can't easily afford. And it's part of the reason probably that China's culture does not, you know, they don't welcome pets, something they can't afford. They've lived in poverty. Now that their economy is getting stronger and their standard of living is rising, I'm going to guess that we're going to begin to see people who start keeping pets. You know, you could see in movies, you see where the Orientals have kept a cricket as a pet. Well, that's interesting. All right. On the one hand, oh, look, a cricket for a pet. How interesting. How odd. But on the other hand, how much does a cricket eat? It's pretty easy to keep a cricket. They're pretty affordable.
Yeah, but they're noisy. Very noisy. Mine wouldn't last very long when I was trying to go to sleep at night. Quack. Quiet. Anyway, let's go ahead. The Supreme Court allows President Trump's travel ban to go fully into effect. This just came out. So the latest travel ban on the six Muslim majority nations to go into effect has been approved by the Supreme Court. They are allowing him. Two of the nine justices, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor, they both dissented. And, of course, the ban applies to travelers from Chad, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen. So even though there are still some legal challenges against it, they're making, these challenges are making their way through the courts. But this does suggest that the high court will uphold or could uphold the latest versions of that ban that Trump had announced back in September. So Trump should be pleased with that.
You know, a lot of things are going Trump's way right now, and it kind of looks as if Trump has understood that a lot of the allegations against him that have been screamed and shouted and whatever, insisted upon, declared, I think you're beginning to look like Trump just said, well, we'll watch and see. He's kind of just hunkered down and said, we'll endure this, these allegations for the moment, and the time is coming when people are going to find out the allegations aren't true. And things do seem to be going his way. There's an article from the Gateway Pundit. The headline is Project Veritas Strikes Again. Washington Post reporter admits Russian story is effing crapshoot. Maybe it doesn't exist. Monday, Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe tweeted a video of Washington Post reporter Aaron Davis attempting to ambush the group's imminent undercover bombshell video on the paper. Well, what they're going on. Here's part of what really rang my bell. In Monday's undercover video, Washington Post national security correspondent Dan Lamonth and director of product Joey Marburger speak to the president, to the paper's hidden agenda. They mean the Washington Post's hidden agenda. And the article says, evidently, covering Trump the way they do is good business, even though it's fake news. Now, that's an interesting claim to me, because most people, or I assume most people, I have had the following assumption. The mainstream media is against Trump because they are leftists and control of the left and whatever. Maybe not. Maybe they're just after Trump because it sells newspapers. All right? Maybe it's just good business from their perspective. That gives it a different spin than what I had thought about in the past. In any case, the essence of the article is that the Russian story may be without basis, without grounds. And here's more evidence of the same thing from ZeroHedge.com. ABC makes epic mistake, retracts bombshell Flynn story. Having caused chaos in the financial markets briefly, set the liberal media on fire with I told you so's, and renewed the round of impeach Trump demands, ABC News issued a clarification to their bombshell Flynn report. Now, the bombshell Flynn report is where Flynn allegedly is going to testify on behalf he's testifying to the FBI. He admits that he was lying. He is now testifying. He's not associating with the Trump camp, or the Trump administration, and it was presumed that he was going to reveal that Trump had, in fact, attempted to collude with the Russians during the election. That was the story, in essence. But ABC News, and it ignited a kind of firestorm briefly in this country. ABC's News issued a clarification, however, to their bombshell Flynn report that not only negates the entire story, but provides President Trump with another round of ammunition to fire against the fake news media. Critically, ABC News reports are correcting their earlier report that Michael Flynn is prepared to testify that Donald Trump directed him to contact the Russians as president-elect, not as a candidate. What they're saying, here's the deal. It was alleged that Trump secretly reached out to the Russians during the campaign in order to get Russian help to change election results, and Hillary claimed this is what threw the election and caused her not to be elected president because the Russians were meddled in the election, and Trump encouraged them to do so. And what the report is saying, nope, Trump did not contact the Russians during the election. He did contact the Russians after he was elected president and became the president-elect, and this is standard procedure. New guy comes into Washington, you're elected in November, you've got until January to kind of get your house in order and prepare for your transition. You're going to be the new president. You got a couple months there, and it is standard procedure to start while you are the president-elect, even though you don't have an official capacity. You nevertheless reach out to England. I'm the new president. Say hello to the English prime minister. Say hello to the president of Russia. Say hello to the rest of these people. You reach out to these people. It's standard procedure. The whole deal hinged on whether Trump had instructed his helpers, his staff, to contact Russian officials during the campaign. If he had done that, that would be wrong. That's what everybody got hot and bothered about. And it appears now that ABC is clarifying and say, oops, never mind. We're wrong about that. He didn't contact Russia during the campaign, but he did reach out after he was elected and became president-elect, which is completely normal, standard, and should not be regarded as a problem. We're going to take a break and be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Madison, Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners there's a special of $1,070 for a Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold piece, $25 face value, beautiful BU Washington quarters. And, of course, it includes all your shipping costs for $1,070. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And everybody knows that, you know, retirement, you know, the baby boomers, and there's no Social Security money, and you can't buy anything, and we know inflation. I just wanted to make a comment. I misplaced my article from this morning, but, you know, they're talking about retirement. $1 million. It's not enough. I know that's not enough, and it's going to get worse and worse, all because of our fiat currency. And you know, they're people. You know, they've been conditioned to believe that their Social Security would take care of them. Although I've always known that it would probably wouldn't be there when I got to the age to collect it. But a lot of
that
people,
was a long time,
time
away,
ago.
Was
a long, yeah, long time.
Oh, it won't be there, but it'll be like centuries from now when I finally retire.
But a lot of people believe that Social Security is going to be there and that they would be able to retire on it. And because they don't take inflation, we talked about this at the beginning of the program, and I just wanted to mention this briefly, they don't take how many dollars it takes to purchase things. And you keep, and we're up to $1 million that
you're saying
isn't,
that the person
the,
needs.
The nest egg isn't big enough anymore. I mean, how many people in this country save $1 million?
No, I understand that. It tells you that the only people who can afford to retire are the people who are fabulously wealthy to begin with. And the rest of us are going to be scratching and scrambling. I mean, we have probably seen, in retrospect, when they write the history books, 10 years or 20 years from now, they're going to say, well, effectively, Social Security, it was good for, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years, something like that. But it was gone. It was gone by 2018. Now, it's still going to be there. People are still going to get that. But the peak is behind us. And the time when we could rely on Social Security, it was taken for granted that you could rely on Social Security. Mm-hmm. That reliance and that assumption is going to be challenged. And it's only a question of when this is going to happen. And, again, the lesson in all of this is, talked about it earlier in the program, you're going to have to take care of yourself. It becomes every man for himself. If you are going to depend on other people to provide you with Social Security, that is, you may be fortunate enough where you receive something significant, maybe even adequate from Social Security, but there's a good chance that you won't. And if you don't want to starve, you have to start taking care of yourself.
And when we talk about, you know, they're just dumping this on the kids, you know, expecting to take care of this. If you have $1 million and inflation adjusted, if you're a 42-year-old Gen Xer who's $1 million at a retirement, it's only going to generate $19,000 a year when all said and when all is said and done. A 32-year-old millennial planning to retire at 67 with $1 million would live below the poverty line. So, they're going to have it tougher than what we have.
No.
And it's
evidence that although the effect is not yet obvious, evidence that our best days are behind us, at least in a short term, from a short term perspective. Government has it is unfortunate that when government does things, the real effects of its actions don't become apparent for 5, 10, 20 years, maybe more. Right? There is a lag. We do it today and it's a yay, yay, hooray, the government passed another law. Yeah. And guess what? By the time you, before you pass on, you're going to see that law turn into something horrendous for this country. And it's, we have to learn to anticipate and be realistic about what's going to happen with these laws. We can't just vote for them because, yay, we passed a new law, going to give Alfred more money. Yay! You can't do that. You have to stop just putting your self-interest in being greedy and parasitical. You got to put that to the side, and we have to start thinking about earning and producing rather than merely consuming. It can't be, you know, I mean, the universal income, whatever it is, base income or whatever they're calling it, they're going to provide, they're talking about providing some basic in minimum income for everybody. Really? How do you suppose that's going to work? You know, I'm sure there are a bunch of leftists that are sitting back, well, we'll just tax the corporations. Really? The corporations are going to be employing robots to a significant degree. And they're going to use those robots to sell their products for lower prices, not just to make more profits, but lower prices. And the reason they're going to do that is because there are other corporations in China, for example, that will also be using robots. And in order to sell their products, they will be selling at lower prices, which means the people in this country who are making products with robots are going to sell at lower prices, which means robots are not going to increase profits. They are going to diminish price, but they won't increase. They are unlikely, in my opinion, to increase profits across the board. There will be some people who get, you know, they install the robots, and yes, there'll be more profits, at least for a while. But it looks to me like the long-term effect, I'm going to install robots, Melody's going to install robots, we're going to compete. Next, the robots are going to drive us into poverty. They're going to cut they are evidence of an incredible level of competition that will not be profitable for most competitors. There'll be some people who do fabulously wealthy. Most people will not. What that means is we're not, what that implies is, assuming that the way I'm looking at it is correct, what it implies is that we're not going to be able to just tax the robots. The robots work for less, they earn less, they generate less profits. It's almost certain that's the way it's going to work out. There won't be money coming, or there won't be significant money coming from the robots to provide everyone with a universal basic income. It's not going to happen. So what are we going to do? I don't know.
Well,
but if you're going to get by, you're going to have to be competitive. You're going to have a service, a product, an investment. You're going to have something that you can rely on to continue to feed you and your family through what's coming. But there's going to be a problem where a lot of people will not be able to do that, and they're not going to be sources of income to feed them. Or at least there may not be. I won't say there absolutely won't be. I don't mean everybody's going to starve to death, but I mean our standard of living is going to be diminished. I don't think it'll be increased by robots. I think it's likely to be diminished because robots will be an attribute of extreme competition, which will translate into minimal profits.
Yeah. Yeah, but the problem is they're going to be the technology will provide significant profits in the beginning.
Yeah, because initially it'll look like that.
You don't have the employee, you don't have the pensions, you don't have the pay, you don't have the insurances, you don't have. I mean,
yeah,
so no, there is
have,
there is significant savings.
There is
by
that
doing
appearance.
The technology over. Over the employee,
but the competition,
a human.
Are you going to buy the robot? Will I buy the robot? It sounds like a great idea. I can cut my costs. But guess what? The guy across the street is selling the same thing. He's going to cut his costs too. And because there aren't going to be employed people to buy the product, they're going to, if they want to sell products, they're going to have to reduce their prices. And the robots will bring us reduced prices, which necessarily translates into reduced profits and translates into reduced tax revenue for the government. I don't see, you look at these robots and you stop and think about it a little bit and roll it around in the back of your mind. This is not a formula for supporting the people of the nation who don't have jobs.
Well, yeah.
Get any robots, you'll go out of business. If you do get a robot, you're going to have to reduce your prices dramatically to compete with the other people who have robots.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, Al, there's only going to be a few. I mean, look at, you have CVS today out there wanting to buy, making an offer on Aetna so they can provide health care, they can provide prescriptions and medications and pharmaceuticals to the, and they are going to target the baby boomers, the elderly. That's what, so you're going to have two or three multinational corporations. You know, who's going to compete with Amazon? But the important thing here too is robots don't buy things.
That's what I agree.
Robots don't go out and they don't you know buy clothes. They don't go out and buy. They don't have children. They don't send them to school. They don't have toys to buy. They're not a consumer. So
no,
you're eliminating. So I'm not so sure when you have, you know, a small amount of consumers that you know. But it's everything. It's not going to be good.
Just headed into a very difficult time. And
you're going to see a change in how things are done. And you know if you're a useless eater, you know what? You better be careful.
You know, cinch up your belt.
You know, you're.
And this is going to be a.
You're not going to.
This does not bode well.
No.
When you stop to think about it, this does not bode well. These robots are going to impoverish people, in my opinion, just because they're going to drive prices down. They're not just going to cut costs. They're going to. The competition between my robots and your robots will force us to cut costs in order to attract the consumer. And as we cut costs, blah blah blah, less profits, less tax revenue. Where's the money coming from for feeding the people who've been replaced by robots? Where's it coming from? Who's got it? There's a problem here, and I don't know that anyone's going to be able to... I don't know that it's surmountable. I mean, it's dangerous, at least though that's the way it looks to me. You know, that's so. I've got another article here from Reuters. And this is interesting given the background that China has set up a new golden yuan, some people call it. They are devising a scheme whereby they can purchase foreign oil producers crude oil for Chinese yuan. But if you don't want the yuan, they've got a deal where you can trade that yuan in for gold. And this is a revolutionary concept, right? It is really just what this is going to do to the dollar and other fiat currencies is hard to say, but it can't be good for them. But here's an article from Reuters. It says, enter the Petro, Venezuela to launch oil-backed cryptocurrency. Venezuela is effectively emulating the Chinese strategy. It says, according to Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, he said Venezuela will create a cryptocurrency backed by oil, gas, gold, and diamond reserves. Right? Now, Venezuela is, you know, it's not a big domino. But it is fascinating to me to see that China's started to set up a currency that's ultimately backed by gold and crude oil. And here's Venezuela doing the same thing. He says the Petro, and that's the name of the new cryptocurrency that they plan to implement, would help Venezuela, quote, advance in issues of monetary sovereignty to make financial transactions and overcome the financial blockade. Why are they doing this? In large measure, because the government of the United States, which has had control of the monetary system for the world, and they have used this, they've used their monetary regulations to punish people like North Korea and Venezuela and Iran. They impose financial and monetary sanctions on these people, and it hurts them. And so they're looking for an alternative. And one of the reasons that Venezuela is going to launch this oil-backed cryptocurrency is to get out from under government, under regulations and sanctions from the government of the United States. So this is the second country in a matter of months to sit back and say, we're going to have a cryptocurrency, but it's going to be backed. It's going to be backed by oil, gas, gold, and diamond reserves. Now, this cryptocurrency is not the same thing as the yuan, the Chinese yuan per se, or maybe it is, maybe it's not. But the point is, it's going to be backed by tangible wealth. I don't know to what extent. They haven't said yet, or at least not in this article. I don't know to what extent it's going to be backed by. Maybe the currency will be issued and it'll be backed by 20% gold, oil, diamonds. Maybe it'll be 100%. Venezuela has a lot of oil. They could do this. They could use oil to back their currency. And they might be able to get out from under the financial blockade that's been imposed on them. And the point is, here's a second country, China number one. Here's a second one, number two. They are going back to a currency that is backed by tangible wealth, including gold. That's a sign of the times, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see how this shakes out, but this is important. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Todd the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.